Welcome to the Weekly Squeak, your weekly geeky squeak with me, as always, Christian Chiller. I hope everybody is well. I hope everybody is surviving winter slash summer slash whatever is going on where you are. 2020 is coming to a slow end. We shall see if 2021 changes, hopefully. Hopefully I get to meet many more of you again in the near future. But for now, I am back with another week of tech news and interviews. My interview this week is with Aurélien Jauger of Strappy, where we talk about their open source headless CMS, which is a little different from some other options. So stay tuned for that. But to begin with, and before we get to that, here are my links for the week. First, an article from MIT Technology Review. This is behind a paywall, but if you use something like Pocket or Instapaper, or you have a subscription, you can read it. It's quite an interesting article that goes into some depth around... So I guess 2020 is a year where we could have really done with venture capital and investments, investing in startups and products and technologies that we really needed. And why did that not really happen? And the article delves into interviewing some people through Y Combinator and a few other places like that, where they do have a kind of profitable business that helps in relevant use cases, for example, drug delivery and drug matching and things like that, but it still is primarily a profit-making business. And should venture capital be stepping up and doing more in a year like 2020, when actually, and the author compares this to other projects that are operating maybe more in a altruistic way that have next to no funding but are giving a greater good. So it's kind of looking at, should VCs, should venture capital be doing more? Should they be investing in companies we need rather than companies they need for their investment? And the structures, the biases, the various other things that lead to this situation. It's a very good article, so I recommend if you can, please do have a read of it. On the subject of different opinions and maybe controversial opinions, this is an article by Cleo Chang on the Center for Journalistic Research called The Substackerati. What is Substack? Substack is something that has emerged in the past 2 years. That is kind of a mixture between Medium, MailChimp, and some other things. It helps writers, and there's a lot of journalists who, finding themselves out of work, sort of transitioned to doing their own thing, and many have turned to Substack. It offers a reasonably good publishing platform and email newsletter publishing platform, plus a degree of discovery and curation for end users and readers, and being able to charge them and things like that. Again, it's a good article. It covers all sorts of bases. For example, does it actually help any writer emerge, or does it only help writers with controversial and relevant opinions, or who already had existing followings before they moved to Substack? The company does actually give out advances and grants, and I guess almost like an author-publisher relationship to some writers. And the argument here could be, do they end up giving them to the same sorts of people, or, you know, is it actually a balanced platform? And Medium had this similar problem. And at the moment, with Substack operating on venture capital money, see previous article, the question could arise that whether it will become just like another Medium in the long run. That Medium started out being very free and open, but when it needed to start making money, it had to change things. And did it really change the face of journalism, or did we end up with just alternatives to more of the same? And it's a hard question to answer sometime. And also, even some of the more popular people here who came out of nowhere, quote unquote, and given a stipend and advance, it's not enough for a full-time job. And they also take a percentage of their subscription fee money that they make from subscribers, that they still have to have a job anyway. So they're still effectively an underpaid, overworked journalist. So has it really helped them? But as we all know, with newsrooms and other sorts of outlets not really employing people anymore, Is it really the only option for people who have a voice that they want to put out there? I've been thinking of trying it myself, but I've kind of wondered if... So I currently use Review and my own website and a little mixture of various tools. Is it worth it to me? Will I end up doing just as much work, or will I benefit from the discovery aspect or not? And I don't really know. Review also has a few features that I quite value, like the ability to aggregate content into the newsletter, and Substack is very much against that. So for example, with the Weekly Squeak newsletter, I obviously have the section of original content, and then I like to include these links, and I'd have to do that all manually, whereas Review lets me just kind of drag them in from places I've favorited and things like that. So I don't know. I'm intrigued to try it, but when I initially looked, I couldn't really see any reason to use it. And I don't necessarily have a big enough following to monetize it yet, but I'd love to hear your feedback, actually. If you have tried it, what do you think of it? Do you subscribe to writers who do use it? How's it been for you? Reach out to me. Find my details on christianschiller.com. And one more link on an old favorite, ZDNet, from Stephen J. Vaughan Nichols, talking about the M1 Max, specifically, though, about using them for machine learning. And this was something that stood out to me in the Apple event when they talked about this neural core being very good for machine learning loads. And they mentioned some applications that were coming out that would take advantage of it. But I thought, what would this mean to actual machine learning practitioners? And in this post, they did actually do some comparisons. And it's interesting to see. Now, there are some numbers here that are quite interesting. So they were trying with the latest version of TensorFlow, the new 13-inch M1 model with 16 gig of RAM, 256 gig SSD, saw a huge jump in performance from the Intel, but not as much as they expected. But still, the important aspect here is the M1 is 8 cores with a 16-core neural engine, and actually they don't really measure gigahertz, but that's... But we can't really compare the specs, but it was compared to a 3.2 gigahertz 16 core Intel Xeon with 32 gig of RAM, an external graphics card, 64 gigabytes of HBM memory, and surprisingly small SSD, but anyway, and it outperformed that, and that machine would have cost a great deal more than the M1 MacBook Pro. So that is the interesting aspect, that a consumer-level machine at a consumer price offers the same machine learning workload as a professional machine that costs a lot more. And that is the interesting aspect. And this keeps happening with the M1 benchmarks. Okay, it's not the best performant machine out there, but in its price range, it definitely is. And that excites me, and I look forward to seeing more. That was my links for the week, and now over to my interview with Aurélien of Strappy. Enjoy.
So I'm Aurélien Georget. I'm one of the co-founders and CPO at Strappy. So maybe I can define what Strappy is. We are We are an open source headless CMS. So the goal is to make sure that every user and developer can spread content on any platform, whereas like traditional CMS such as WordPress, for example, you're managing your content to display it on a website, on a HTML pages. Our goal is to integrate with like the Jamstack or with mobile application. And our goal is to make sure you can spread that content on multiple devices at the same time.
So anyone who's listened to my podcast before or knows me is kind of probably aware of what some of these terms mean. We've had a few Jamstack people on. I actually personally used to, back in the day, I used to actually contribute to and implement Drupal. So I know very well about traditional CMS land. And I also even worked for Contentful, who have also been on the show back in 2017 as well. So I know this world well. I think Drupal might have even been one of the first CMSs to coin this phrase of headless CMS. I do remember talking about it back in about 2015, 16, something like that. Just to unpack, especially Jamstack, a little, who, for people who are new to the terms, what does that mean exactly? Why is it different from the traditional CMS?
The Jamstack, the goal is to pack all the content and all your assets in a static application, and then you deploy it on what we call a CDN, a content content delivery network, and
yeah.
It's to an easy way to build very fast and performant website, because you don't need to make a request every time there is a user on a visitor on your website, because everything is already there and you just need to serve a single file. So that's what Jamstack is. And for that, we're using a lot of JavaScript API and Markdown technology. So Jam for G for JavaScript, A for API, M for Markdown.
So I actually did not ever realize that. You're the first person I have spoken to about Jamstack who's actually explained what JAM stands for.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I thought they just made it up out of somewhere. No one's ever actually said that to me before. Strange. Okay, cool. So let's go back a step a little bit. Firstly, I'd just like to know why you and your founders did this in the first place. Like, what was the background? Where did you come from? What made you want to create something like this in the first place?
We were like working and we are studying together on a school in Paris. Mm-hmm. And we were working as freelancer for customers. We are developing website. We were also heavy user of WordPress at that time. Mm-hmm. And we were also developing mobile applications in WordPress. Yeah, didn't fit our needs for that use case. So each time we had to develop our own API. We are also a very huge fan of Node.js and mm-hmm. JavaScript. And we are mostly JavaScript developers. And so it was easier for us to develop API based on Node.js than using a PHP framework at the time. So for every project, we have to reinvent the wheel and so that's why we decided to create. It was not Strapi, it was just a JavaScript framework, backend JavaScript framework, to mm-hmm. build API with a simple dashboard. Mm-hmm. And then we published it on GitHub, and we started to see people raising issues. Oh, okay, could you implement this feature? I would like to manage a better way to manage my image and my assets, and mm-hmm. say, okay, yes, we are. And we started to improve our product, and the number of stars was rising at that time also. And we started to see a lot of traction. So we were basically the first user of our product because we just identified an issue and there were no open source solution at that time. And the open source part was like a no-brainer. I really like to say that we are like open source children. We are raised using open source solution mm-hmm. and using them. And the developer we are right now is because of open source technologies. So it was like a no-brainer to push and make Strapi an open source project. And we had no ambition at that time. It was just a student project. And mm-hmm. then right now we are 25 in the team, and we're just raising a series A. So pretty cool.
What year was this? When did you start the project? And then when did you decide on to become a company?
At the end of our study, we decided to found the company, to incorporate the company, because it was back in 2014. It was a very like the first commit on our GitHub repository, and we had zero stars at that time. And in 2016, I think we have almost 5,000 stars. So it was that in front of us that yes, there's something, there's a traction, and we have to continue. And we are enjoying a lot working on the project. So yeah, we decided to incorporate the company and make it a business.
Okay. And I have some of my own sort of guesses, and I can also imagine it almost said with a French accent and it sounds different, but the name. So, I mean, it could be Strapi. It could be Strapi.
We even heard Strapi.
Strapi. I don't know. What's the name mean? Is there anything behind the STR?
we pronounce it strappy.
Okay.
But yeah, if you want to pronounce it strappy, yeah, it's okay. It's strappy, and it comes from bootstrap your API. So it's
okay.
The combination of three words to bootstrap your API.
So yeah, I think English uses a French word for that. That's portmanteau, I think, isn't it? I think that's what that. I don't know. Let's not embarrass myself by thinking that's what it is when it isn't. So, okay. So, I mean, there's other options in this space. There's kind of in two camps. There's open source, and then there's business ones. So let's actually first start with the open source, because that's probably your bigger competitor, and also you're in competition with yourself as a business, as any traditional open source company. So why use Strappy over headless Drupal, headless WordPress, over, I know there's other open source headless CMS options as well. And of course, us building developer products, there's also the competition of just a developer doing it themselves. What do you offer over some of those well-known open source options?
Many things. I would say that even if you start to build a CMS by your own, and we have seen a lot of digital agencies having their own CMS that they push to the client for every project. It's like this creator of this project in the digital agency decided to leave the company. You have no one to maintain that project. Most of the time, you don't have any documentation. So it can be in a tough situation. As a digital agency, you should really use a CMS. People who are spending 100% of their time building and maintaining that product, especially for security patches. Mm-hmm. So this for a digital agency and for people who would like to develop their own CMS, but it's still a great thing to do as a developer.
We've all done it.
We do it ourselves.
In the past. These days, I think developers do other things, but when I started learning, that was what everybody did.
And back in 10 years ago, WordPress didn't have any REST API, or it was the same for Drupal. And I know there's it was a very funny discussion between the boss, Matt Billman, the CEO of Netlify, and Matt Mullenweg, the CEO of Automattic, about the Jamstack. And I think the WordPress has been designed to build a website, to make the development of website easier and faster. But right now, the paradigm of development, you want to decouple your backend and your frontend. And most of the JavaScript developers, they still like WordPress, and I do like WordPress, but it's easier to develop and use a solution like Strappy, for example, who is built using JavaScript, because it's the same language as front-end developers. So if you go into the Strappy code base, you will understand it as a front-end developers. Mm-hmm. And also, we only provide an API. We don't come with a lot of features that you don't need. So Strappy is lightweight than Drupal and WordPress. And we built Strappy to specially make it work very well for front-end developers. Front-end means also mobile developers.
Yeah.
That's the argument. And also the language that we use, JavaScript, is like with JavaScript, you can do everything, back-end, front-end, mobile. And you have only one language for your WordStack, so it makes a difference at the end.
I think that, interestingly, in some respects, Drupal started doing headless better because it was always a pain to develop for the front end of Drupal, whereas WordPress was easier. I didn't say better, but easier. So it started going down that path much sooner, because theme developers for Drupal were always complaining about how hard it was. So it was easier for them to move away from it because no one really liked the front end anyway. But as a back end, it was sort of more powerful. Now, actually, before we move on to your commercial competitors, I just wanted to ask one other question, because we haven't really covered it. And it just occurred to me as we were talking through that. And I think it's important to understand this before understanding
the commercial competitors. So if Strapi is open source and I want to use the open source version, what does that look like? Am I running a backend service on a server somewhere? Or like, am I running it? Yeah, that's actually suddenly what I suddenly realized. We haven't really explained. What is Strapi and how do I run it? How do I use it? On the open source version to begin with, yeah.
Yeah, like any open source package, Strapi is available through NPM. So you just need to open your terminal and yarn install Strapi. Okay. And then,
so I would create a backend service as always. If I wanted to self-host, I would have to create that and run that somewhere. And then people build a front end on top of that self-hosted version of Strapi, basically.
Yeah. Strapi is basically the backend part. And you run it on your server and your computer, and then you develop your front end. Yeah, sure.
That's what I assumed. I just wanted to double check before we move forward because we hadn't actually clarified that. So, okay. So when it comes to your commercial competitors, and there's a couple in this space, Contentful being the main big one, I guess.
Yeah.
In addition to just hosting things for them, which is kind of a given, that's probably going to be one thing you do. What other features does the commercial version offer on top of the open source version?
We have two versions, the community one and the enterprise edition. Mm. The community edition is limited in terms of features. So you're not limited in terms of usage. You can have many content types, many entries. You do whatever you like. But we identify some features that are really enterprise oriented. And it could be like a very advanced permission system. We could have the role-based access control feature. We identify that enterprise is a very advanced. They have a lot of advanced usage in that specific space. We also identify the SSO feature, also the way you translate, you localize your content. For most of the usage, you don't need the whole feature. You just want to translate your website in 2, 3, or 4 different languages. But we identify that for enterprise, they also need a workflow to communicate and to interact with translation tools. So this feature, this integration are part of the enterprise edition. And so we have different plans depending on your usage. So it starts at $29 and then you grow depending on the number of features you need.
Okay. So bearing in mind some of that and bearing in mind that there are other businesses in this space, some of which we've mentioned, What do you feel you offer or do differently from some of those other competitors that would make me as a developer or someone as marketing team or a non-technical copywriter, et cetera, the various use cases, the users and user types that differentiates you and why I should use you over some of the other options?
It depends. It could be for the developer experience. We heard that a lot from other users who are using our competitors. If you're developing locally, your front end and your back end is also local, it's super fast. It's impossible to reproduce this kind of experience. You can even develop if you have no internet connection. But if you're relying on a cloud solution, sometimes there is some issue, it could be slow, it's very, very rare, but it happens and you need an internet connection. So in some country in the world, the internet connection are not good. And so Strapi help this developer to develop their project, even if they don't have access to internet or just every developer in the world, if they want to have a very fast experience and very good developer experience. So this is by design because as we are an open source project. But also, for being an open source project, it means you control everything. It means you own your data. You will choose where your data is going to be stored. You don't, your data, for example, we have this example. We have a lot of banks using Strapi because there's some laws that they are legally, they cannot host their data on the cloud because mm-hmm. by laws. So they need to use open source software for that. And Strapi is one is the best and number one in terms of open source LMS, headless LMS. So that are the main different by design why Strapi could be a choice for you. But later, maybe you could also talk about that, about the content editing experience.
Actually, yeah, let's I would like to just clarify one point there, and then maybe we'll come to some of the other pieces. So maybe one thing you said that again we didn't fully unpack because I had some assumptions about your business model. So even if I have the enterprise version, I host it myself?
Yeah.
So it's always self-hosted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We do not provide hosting version right now. It's an enterprise. We are following the open core model. So we just need to install a license and then it unlock most of the feature.
Interesting. Okay. That's not quite what I expected. That's a little different from many other companies in the Jamstack space, actually. So that's interesting. Okay. and of course, if I wanted to on the open core, I could create my own forks and things like that as well.
Yeah.
This
is also the power of open source, about the customization. It was not matter point. It's really on to customize. Because as you have a backend project, your goal is to manage content, but sometimes most of your projects, you need one more URL to manage the thing. You need cron task. You need to do like business development for a reason, and that's why it's super important to be able to customize Strapi, or even if your clients or your customers, they want to change something in the dashboard, you can do it. So this is the third argument about what Strapi is great. If you need customization, it's better than even in cloud. You can sometimes customize a bit, but it's very limited. While Strapi, you can do everything you want.
Now let's talk about that content editing experience, because that's obviously, I mean, well, actually, let's start with the bare basics. So if I wanted to, as a developer who likes writing Markdown, can I ignore the content editing experience entirely and operate a bit like a static site generator, or is everything in a database somewhere, or can it also work with flat files?
So you mean you would like to host your data on a repository, for example, Markdown file?
Yeah, say I didn't want to use the... I mean, obviously, a lot of people would say, why would you be bothering to use something like Strapi in this case? But just out of pure interest, could I write my copy in Markdown in flat files and Strapi pick that up? Or is it I have to use the editor in the browser in some way?
You could use, I think we have a plugin, some of our community members developed a plugin to use Markdown files as the database. And so, yeah, you could, it's not the most common use case.
I have some use cases for that, actually, because I am still running my personal site on a very, very cobbled together Jekyll installation.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I actually serve... JSON APIs out of Jekyll, which is really not what it's designed for. So I could do with a solution for that, actually. So anyway, ignoring that rather esoteric edge use case.
But you could really do it because Strapi, we are compatible with many databases.
Yeah,
you can host your data on MySQL, or you can Postgres or MongoDB. And everything in open source. So if you want to develop your own connector to have another data source like Markdown files on GitLab or GitHub repository, you could do it. So yeah.
Okay. And so let's talk about the content editor. Is it your own, or have you leveraged, I don't know, I'm not sure what flavor of JavaScript you're written in, but have you leveraged some components from elsewhere, or did you write your own editor? What was the story there?
We develop our own editor. Not sure it was the best choice we made because it's really hard. It's something we would like to improve next year. It's to improve the content editing experience. And I think it's most of the headless CMS want to improve that, because we were like a space very focused on developers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's more like an architecture and structure approach. Yeah. You decouple your front end, your back end. But at the end, your developer represents only 5% of the lifecycle of your product. And then you will have content editors, you will have marketing and communication team in your CMS. And they don't really like Markdown. Yeah. They want more collaborative way to work together, like using real-time comments, workflow to review the article written by someone else. So yeah, it's really something you would like to work on in next year. Okay. So yeah.
Real-time content editing is fun. I saw a great talk a couple of years ago, actually, from the Atlassian engineers, how they built that into Confluence.
Yeah.
And Google Docs I really, makes it look very easy, but it is not.
And I think the LSMH should be the tool where every content editor should edit their content. And even right now, we identify this at Strapi, but I'm pretty sure it's the same for most of the other computers. Like a lot of people are still using Google Documents to write their article first, and then they copy paste it in the CMS. And this should not be like that. The content, the LSMS should be the space to write and to collaborate on the content.
And so I think we could have an entire conversation on this subject alone, because this is one as a kind of tech writer who likes to use text editors and Markdown and various for various reasons. But then I work with people who are not so into that and want to use Google Docs, and we're both like, oh, do we have to, you know, because I want. And the reason is, firstly, I want offline to work well, which Google Docs can do, but so-so. Mm-hmm. And then in my text editor, which in my particular case is Visual Studio Code, which is also JavaScript, of course, I have a lot of plugins that do all sorts of things for me. And everyone's writing experience is very particular to them. And actually, I've been having this conversation with quite a few people about trying to get this kind of ideal world crossover between what technical people want and what other people want, and that has collaboration as good and as seamless as Google Docs. And obviously, you've already said to the fact that you don't do that bit yet. But maybe let's actually talk about some of the other parts. So firstly, can the Strapi content experience work offline to any degree?
No. No, cannot work offline right now.
Yeah, and you have the problem with the various database connections, which if they were poorly configured, I think there's too many unknowns in that for you, I guess.
You can write offline, but you won't be able to save it. Yeah. And we don't store the data on your browser waiting for a better internet connection. So no. But
okay.
Yeah, this is something asking that the community ask
Map. Well, now you mentioned the community, you mentioned it several times, and this is actually leads very nicely into the follow-up question. So it's already fairly obvious from what you've said that you do have the ability to create extensions to I'm guessing various aspects. What sort of ways can external developers extend Strapi, and what touch points?
Many things. And we are even right now working on internal API that we will reveal next year. But you can do a lot of things. You can work on what we call the templates. So the templates are like content structure already pre-built for you. So if you want to start your project with a blog structure or an e-commerce structure, you already have all your content structure, because Strapi has been designed as a product using the content as a system. Like you have design system, or you have components in the development world, the developer world. And we have the same, we apply the same principle to content. Like Strapi, you have components, and these components can be reused in multiple collection or content type. This is the way we call that. A collection would be an article. So you have a title, description, a cover, and then you can have a component to manage your metadata, your SEO metadata, for example. But you could reuse that component for managing the metadata for your product collection. So, and if you make an edit in one of these components, the edit will be also visible in the product collection tab. So yeah, we are thinking the content as a content system. This is the way we call it. Mm-hmm. And so this is the template. We have also the starter. So the starter, the front end part of Strapi, because we identify that, and it's the same for every headless CMS. But most of the users, they don't see the value of an headless CMS until they see a website, a front end mm-hmm. using that data.
Yeah.
And I know that the Nux and Next.js team are working, even the Gatsby team are working a lot on providing a lot of starters for every headless CMS. And yeah, I really think they should continue on that path, because it's the best way to show that headless CMS and front-end framework could really work well together. And the last part of that way to develop is to develop the ecosystem, to develop plugins. It could be third-party integration with Sentry, with Google Tag Manager, with Stripe, with PayPal. And this, everything could be built by the community. We are starting to have a dedicated team on that. We call that the integration team, to work with the community to identify what are the main needs and the most frequent integration. Because, like, for example, the Stripe integration is very asked for every e-commerce website. And a lot of people are using Stripe to read e-commerce websites. So that's a really good use case.
Yeah. And can you only develop extensions for the open core version, or can people also develop commercial extensions in the kind of Atlassian model, or is that something you're thinking about?
Actually, the code base of the enterprise edition is completely open. It's on the same repository. So you have access to both editions. We really follow the path of GitLab on that, I think, and even Elastic has the same. To not have two different code base, but only a single one, when everyone can contribute even to the enterprise edition. Only the license is changing between each edition. So yeah, you can develop in the core, and you can submit it to the community. Right now, you can only submit free plugins.
Yeah, okay.
But
okay,
we do have the vision of building a marketplace when everyone could sell plugins not for free.
Okay. Actually, and one thing we haven't really spoken about, which, considering you're an headless CMS API based content delivery, we haven't really actually spoken much about the APIs yet. So what APIs are available? Can I read? Can I write?
Yeah.
Like, what are the APIs available to me?
Yeah, we have two API, the REST API and the GraphQL API.
So okay, yeah, you are in the JavaScript world, yes.
Enable the GraphQL using installing and downloading a plugin.
Yeah.
Right now, the API is a crude. You can create, you can edit, delete, you can count, you can make defiltering queries, you can do a lot of things. You can even add your own route or URL to this API. So if you want to extend that API, you can do it. You have access to all the files, the controller, the services, and the model. So you can do everything. And also, we plan to rebuild that API almost from scratch for the next version, the V4 Strapi. Mm-hmm. This will be available in Q1 2021. And we will also include a better pagination system.
Okay.
And we will mostly follow the JSON API specification.
Okay. So you've mentioned a few things here and there already. The version 4, the collaborative editing. Anything else on the roadmap for the next few quarters?
The main thing will be the internal API to develop plugin integration by the beginning of next year. We are working right now on the internationalization feature to localize your content. This is one of the most important features of any CMS, because if you don't do it well, it could be a nightmare, because it's the base, the foundation of the CMS. The marketplace should be a topic by the end of next year, certainly. And a lot of few things. I cannot reveal everything, but we have a really interesting roadmap. This roadmap is actually public. Most of the
I just came across that a minute ago. Yeah, which is interesting. And is this the? I can see you're using
product yeah.
board. Yeah, there's yeah. like little. There's numbers by each one. Is that an indication of
yeah
a number of votes? Okay. So validation. All right. Validation, field validation. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. The main
refresh token JWT. Okay. Yeah. Single sign on, not very popular, strangely. Okay.
Yeah, because we added this one very recently. But,
ah,
yeah.
okay. All right, fair enough. Oh, cloud hosting platform. Not very popular either.
I published it like 10 days ago. But yeah, we would like to measure the interest of having a cloud hosting platform.
Yeah. And actually, you can go through what's planned, what's in progress. So we do have Internet API. Yeah, it's some of the stuff you've mentioned already.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And then you can see what's actually come through already. Okay. Field level permissions. Ah, interesting. Interesting. Mm. Okay.
We also have a forum.stripe.io when you can follow all the announcement and chat with the community. We have a huge community. It's hard to measure it, but I think we estimate we have between 50,000 to 100,000 community members right now. So a lot of people who want to see new features.
I just have one more question, mostly on the kind of use case. So on your website, you have a handful of reasonably well-known logos here, IBM, Walmart, NASA. I do actually speak French, but I cannot seem to speak it today. Société Générale. which is a bank or an insurance? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's a bank. Yeah.
Okay. And Delivery Hero, which is a delivery service in Europe. I think it's only in Europe. What are they using Strapi for? What's the main kind of part of their business they're using it for?
I cannot say
for most of
them. Maybe I have it's not a logo available on the homepage, but it's a use case from the MIT of Massachusetts. They decided to create a bench that it's an IoT. It's an object that it's a bench that they put in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. And the goal is not to build furniture for the city, but just to prevent earthquakes. So, they manage all the audio files and some specific properties using Strapi to advertise, prevent the population when there is an earthquake coming, and to make sure they will repeat all the security procedures, etc. So this is a use case we never imagined when we decided to build Strapi that this use case could happen. But also we have another one with the firefighters of Paris. Mm-hmm. They created a belt and they are using it in the middle of fire, and Strapi is managing the data locally. So the server is on the truck, the fireman truck, and the firefighter are connected through the belt to Strapi, and Strapi is managing the CO2 level on their blood. Mm-hmm. Or they are also saying that, you should go out of this fire because it's not healthy right now for you. So all these messages and all these files and property are managed for Strapi is a very interesting use case. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And just on some of the integration points, you kind of have down the bottom of the page. I don't know if these are SEO terms or they're actually meaningful things, but like Gatsby CMS, React CMS, Vue CMS, Jekyll CMS, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Are these actual integration points, or are you kind of just trying to catch SEO traffic to explain how people could use
it? Yeah, it's mostly for SEO, a lot of people are searching for, looking for React CMS and what could be the best CMS for them. And we believe Strapi could be a good match for them. And I think that's why we are doing it.
I think I would have to dig into a bit more detail to find out how some of these would work. Like, it's interesting because you are part of this Jamstack thing, but you're also a little kind of different. in some ways, because you have this extra bit that people need to host somewhere and things like that. So I'm kind of interested to see how it could work. So like Jekyll plus Strapi, I mean, I could imagine if I used that plugin or something, it's in theory that's way, or I'm guessing I just use Jekyll as a front-end renderer and pull in the content somehow. Is that probably the main way, I guess?
Yeah.
Which in many respects is not, I suppose it's not, well, I don't know. I suppose it is sort of Jekyll. It's more just liquid, I guess. But
CMS is not, it's related to Jamstack. Jamstack is a friend, it's most on the front-end part. Our approach is different.
I think it's mostly about keeping the different components separated. That's kind of the
Have a vision on the way the content should be managed in the next 10 years about being more collaborative. But even we also think the content should not be the same on every device. I think we should take care more about, for example, the user preferences or the user context. I like to give this example, but if you're on a website and you are in the subway and you have a very poor internet connection and you have your headphones connected and you have a low level of battery, it doesn't make sense to send you a 4K video. Even if the website is requested a 4K video, it doesn't make sense. And this should be managed by this headless CMS. Okay, these are the parameters, doesn't make sense. And we should move from a content management system to a message management system. I think we should ask the marketing team to create a message and to deliver different version of the content. So you could have an audio file, kind of a video file, you could have a text, a very short and very long text with picture.
And it's interesting you say this, because this actually goes back to when I kind of got, when I was actually doing CMS work, was when this was really an issue, because internet connections were poor and mobile internet connections especially poor. Mm-hmm. And I used to run a very early kind of mobile developer meetup. But that was when things like Nitrobi phone cap, not even before it was owned by Adobe, were popular. And I think Native Script was around, Titanium Accelerator, all these kind of cross-platform options. Because I noticed you do have support for Flutter, which is a language I find quite interesting. I have started building some side project applications with it. I'd be interested to see how that could connect in, because I haven't really been sure what to do with the quote unquote content for my Flutter application. So so it could be an interesting use case to experiment with. Anything else you want to make sure? This is a subject I can talk endlessly about, so I've gone off on a few tangents, but anything else you want to make sure we cover before we finish up?
I think I'm done. We talk about a lot of things, about so many things, but I don't have any more to say.
The thing, just to clarify it, just I suppose as it's useful for a largely developer audience, is obviously as it's self-hosted as well. And you've already mentioned pretty much there's no barrier here to going and downloading, installing and experimenting.
Mm-hmm. It's free.
Sign up or anything like that. Yep. I bet in 20 years you may regret that statement, but we'll see what happens.
I mean, there was a very interesting read or thread on Hacker News today about the debate on developing an open source library instead of developing an open source product. Yeah. And I really like to say we are not an open source project, we are an open source product. So we are not community driven, but we are listening a lot to the community. Product is about many things, about user needs, about customers, about business needs, and also about design. So, and the product team would like to find the right balance between each needs and each problematic. So that's super interesting. This is the way we are trying to build a very successful open source product.
That was my interview with Aurelien from Strapi. And now just a few updates from me. So I need to update the website a little bit. There's a few out-of-date links. Well, not out-of-date, but I haven't got new ones on here. My last expose, which you can find on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, and also twitch.tv/dxpose, was with Neo4j. They actually reached out to me and asked me to have a look at that, and it was actually a pretty pleasant experience. It was a very mature product, but they've done some pretty good jobs with their developer experience. I also finished up part 3 of Creatures Such As We on the Soul Adventurer. Again, you can find that on YouTube or Twitch at twitch.tv/thesoloadventurer. Next expose, I will be looking at Strappy, connecting up with this podcast and newsletter and video. And I will also be starting a new solo D&D game of Frozen Offerings. So that's to enjoy there. I have a few events coming up. I will be speaking at Write the Docs Australia on December the 3rd and 4th, and then also at API Days Paris, I think the week after that, the 7th to the 9th of December. You can also find those too. I have a blog post on the Humanitech blog, which is a wrap-up interview they did there with the CTO of GitHub, which is quite interesting. And I'm working on another one with them right now. And I have a blog post just coming out soon on the Knowledge Owl blog, where I look at screenshotting tools. So you can also find some of that there too. This week, I'm actually off working on side projects, so there will be a lot more next week. My new overlays and things, already one output of that, but a bit more to come too. I'm not doing the NaNoWriMo daily sessions anymore, but I am still doing NaNoWriMo, so you can be friends with me, Christian Schiller, on NaNoWriMo.org if you want to. But until next time, have a good week, and thank you very much for joining me.